As of this week, nearly 900,000 U.S. veterans await their VA disability benefits. An average waiting period on claims decisions is about 327 days. Claims older than 125 days number more than a half million. And despite the computer and internet revolution that hit this country about 20 years ago now, nearly all VA claims are still done on paper. What has or hasn't happened to bring about this state of affairs? Coming up, we'll hear from the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and also from the city of Columbus. We invited the VA to join the conversation. That was our first call. We have attempted on a daily basis for more than a week to invite a representative from the VA at either the state or federal level to come on the show. Our requests have been ignored. Stars and Stripes reporter Leo Shane has been covering the backlog issue, and we welcome Leo back to the show. Hi, Leo.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me back.
Question for our listeners first. Are you a veteran waiting to hear about your VA benefits claim? Give us a call and share your story. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Leo, when we talk about veterans benefits, what all are we referring to? Is this just medical? What do we mean by benefits?
Yeah, it's the whole compensation and pension rating bundle that we're referring to here. So we're talking about a whole range of payouts for various disabilities, for injuries, for folks who have PTSD and are unable to work because of their combat-related wounds. So it's a whole host of things. Generally, we're not talking about some of the education benefits that are available to veterans or home loans, things like that. That's separate from the backlog issue that we're referring to.
We talk about the backlog, but that's out of how many claims made in a year? I said something close to 900,000 in the backlog, but how many claims come in, say, in any given year now?
Yeah, so we start to get into the number, into the weediness of the numbers pretty quick. The VA has processed over the last 4 years about 4.1 million claims. That's what they've gotten out the door. The problem is they've gotten about 4.6 million claims in the door at the same time. So right now in the system, there are about 840,900, you know, is the easy number being thrown out there. Those are claims in the system, and then there's about 560,000 that have been waiting for more than 4 months. And those are the ones that the VA considers backlog. Those are the ones that they haven't fulfilled their promise to process in a timely manner.
And when someone's waiting for their benefit, say it's their benefit, they've been wounded and there's a certain payout for that, what are we talking about? Is this usually a substantial income that they're waiting for?
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of these folks, that's their only income. I mean, for someone who's rated 100% disabled by the VA or by the military, the point is that they can't work. They have injuries that are so severe, you can't go out and get a job. You can't go out and hold down a normal 9-to-5. So we're talking about a few thousand dollars a month for some folks. For some folks, even more. And the VA, when they process, will pay back retroactively from the start of the claim. So you can get a nice big payout, but if you're waiting for a year, 2 years for your claim to be processed, that's rent money, that's grocery money every month that you just don't have coming in right now. So it creates a real hardship for a lot of these veterans who are just trying to figure out, geez, how am I gonna stay in my house for another month? How am I going to, afford to eat?
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest right now, Leo Shane, reporter for Stars and Stripes. We're talking about the VA claims backlog. If you have a story to tell, if you're waiting for your VA benefits and have been waiting for some time, give us a call. Let us know what's going on. 614-292-8513. If you feel like you've been well taken care of by the VA, we'd like to hear your story as well. So you can give us a call or you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. Leo Shane, 97% of the VA claims are on paper. A new computer system should be up and running by the end of the year, and they think by 2015 sometime it'll have caught up. But how in the world is it that in, you know, we put a man on the moon when I was a kid. How is it that in 2013, the VA still has not computerized their claim system? It just, it defies logic.
Well, and that's been a lot of the frustration up on Capitol Hill. It is a massive, complicated system. We are talking about files, not just for the recent war veterans, but for guys that date back decades and decades. So getting all of that into a digital format, getting it into a common format that they can read, has been a problem and has been something the VA has been working on for years. As you said, the VA is projecting that that by 2015, they'll have their processing systems completely computerized. By 2017, both the VA and DOD have promised that there will be a lifetime electronic medical record for troops who, you know, to guide them through. They enlist, they get everything down on computers. It's transferred seamlessly over to VA. One record follows them for their whole life. And, you know, that's the veterans groups will tell you that's the goal. That's the gold standard to have. Because if they had that, we wouldn't see some of the problems we've seen in the past. Folks who have to go back for multiple visits, folks who may have an allergy to one medication, but since it's written on the wrong piece of paper, this doctor doesn't know about it, so he prescribes it, and then we have complications from there. There's plenty of folks who want to yell at the VA for not getting it done. There's plenty of folks who will step up and defend the VA and mm-hmm. say, well, it's complicated. There's a lot of files here. You know, you're talking about 22 million veterans in America today. It's not something you can do overnight. But it's, you know, it is a major problem, and it is something that even the VA will admit they're woefully behind on catching up with the electronic revolution.
How does the military prepare their outgoing veterans? How do they prepare them for the process of working with the VA? Do they have some kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
Do they do it before they leave the service?
There are transition assistance programs in the military, and they're designed to do just that. They're designed to give all these, about to be veterans information on here's what benefits you have. Here's how you access the VA. Here's some common pitfalls. The problem is those programs have come under a lot of criticism in recent years too. You'll hear a lot of death by PowerPoint, that it's just guys sitting getting presentations. They just, they think that they've heard some of it before. They think it won't be relevant. And that's, there are a lot of facets to this problem, but one of them is that if you don't have an immediate problem, if you've maybe feel like you have traumatic brain injury, but it's not, it's just a headache to you and you don't think about it, or it's you have some PTSD or you have some minor back injury and you don't want to talk about it. Years from now, that could turn into a life-altering complication. And for a lot of folks from the Vietnam era, from the Gulf War era, they just never sought out the VA. So on top of the tens of thousands of guys who are getting out now and are dealing with, hey, how do I access the VA? How do I deal with this? The VA has now gotten a wave of older veterans, Vietnam era, Gulf War, mm-hmm. Even some World War II folks who are coming back and saying, hey, you know what, my post-traumatic stress was never diagnosed because we didn't know enough about it at the time, and now that there are new programs, I'm seeking benefits for that. My minor back injury from this war is now becoming a debilitating injury for me, and I need compensation for that. So the VA is juggling, not just the modern era, but as it modernizes, it's dealing with all of these past problems as well, and that just adds more complication. Whatever the standard is for medical records for guys leaving the military now, certainly not the same as it was in 1976 or in 1985 or even in 1993. So you've got, as they try and digitize these records, as they try and figure out ways to simplify the whole process, you've got a whole host of material that has to be brought into a common format.
To what extent do the military branches communicate with the VA? Is the VA part of the military?
The VA is not part of the military, but in recent years, there's been a real strong push to keep the VA in constant communications with the Department of Defense. And actually, up on Capitol Hill the last couple of days, it's become a kind of point of contention. The DoD right now is looking at a new electronic medical record system. They're going to be bidding out some stuff. The VA had been pushing them to adopt the same back-end system that they use for simplicity to try and increase some of the file sharing here, to try and increase some of the collaboration. DoD has decided as of yesterday that they're not necessarily going to do that. They're considering some other systems, some more modern, some more open source systems. So there's a lot of lawmakers who are banging their heads against the wall saying we can't even get DoD and the VA to agree on a common medical system. How are we ever going to fix this larger problem of getting these records seamlessly traded back and forth and having one real lifetime record for these troops from the day they enlist until, late in their life.
Anne in Columbus, you're on the air with Leo Shane, reporter for Stars and Stripes. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you. This is a very interesting subject to me. I'm very interested in how we're treating our veterans. It's a moral issue for me. I'm wondering if there is something that Congress could do with a budget to give enough money to get this all this stuff digitalized. It seems to me that if you throw enough money at something, you can get it done. And I'm wondering how Congress's budgeting has affected whether this gets done or not, and how quickly it can get done. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Leo Shane.
Yeah, so that's been one of the fights. I mean, they've already invested about $1 billion in working on this digital system, and lawmakers aren't happy with what they've seen so far. They feel like the money spent has led to still fragmented systems and still some proprietary fights over whose legacy system is better and whose isn't. So it hasn't been quite as simple as just tossing a bunch of money at it and getting them to agree. And I've heard from a number of outside folks in private industry, medical records folks, that have said, look, it shouldn't be this complicated, but you are dealing with two gigantic bureaucracies. I mean, two of the largest, the largest bureaucracies in the country. So it's not just a matter of, as John Stewart made the joke, it's not just a matter of getting folks in and out of McDonald's. It's finding common sources. It's finding common formats. It's figuring out ways to share medical information, which is already a very private and regulated issue.
Mm-hmm.
Ways to share that across different doctors, across different eras, and make it easy and accessible to, even a 70-year-old who is used to carrying around a nice thick folder with all of his medical appointments. There are two minds up on Capitol Hill now. One is we've got to keep funding this. We've got to find ways to do it. But there's more folks who are saying, look, we don't like the investment we've gotten so far. We have to get better answers. We have to get a better plan out here and figure out exactly how all of this is working together. And actually, in an unusual move yesterday, the Senate Appropriations Committee stepped out, called up the VA Secretary and the Defense Secretary to a roundtable and a press conference up on Capitol Hill, saying they're going to take particular interest in this issue. You've started to see a handful of folks in Congress who don't usually talk about veterans, or at least that hasn't been their focus, suddenly start shifting this way because of some of the attention on the backlog problem, some of the concerns that even though the VA has gotten so much money over the last few years, we haven't seen the results that we had all hoped for.
My guest is Leo Shane. He's a reporter for Stars and Stripes. We're talking about the backlog at the Veterans Administration for Veterans Benefits. If you have a story to tell, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Jarrett Krasoska has published 20 books, and he always lets kids know they're authors too.
I don't look to the first book that was ever published as to where my career began. I look to the first book that I ever wrote. And the first book that I ever wrote, I wrote when I was a third grader.
NPR's Backseat Book Club, today on All Things Considered, from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on 89.7 NPR News. support comes from Bethel Dental Care, providing general dentistry from pediatrics to geriatrics in a comfortable atmosphere. A proud supporter and promoter of WOSU programming. More information at 614-451-0341 or online at betheldentalcare.com.
This is 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, bringing you local and national news 24/7 and always streaming at WOSU.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America group has made the VA backlog their number one advocacy priority this year, and they say they won't stop fighting until the backlog ends for everyone. Joining us now is Angela King, an Iraq Navy veteran and a leadership fellow of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Welcome to our show, Angela.
Thanks for having me on.
I should say welcome back.
Thank you.
And still with us, Leo Shane, a reporter for Stars and Stripes. A question for our listeners. Are you a veteran waiting to hear about your VA benefits claim? Give us a call. Share your story. Maybe you have a positive story to share. We want to hear those, too. Angela, you went with the IAVA in March to, quote, unquote, Storm the Hill event in Washington, D.C., tell us about what you were trying to accomplish at that event.
So at that event, we had 20 so or more veterans that came from across the country to Capitol Hill to push our policy for the year. And of course, like you mentioned, our focus this year was on the VA backlog. And so we just met with multiple members in Congress, and we spoke to them about the VA backlog in our resolution for that. And that's really our group right now is calling for the president to step in, and we would like to hear from him.
Well, the president said a couple years ago, this is absolutely unacceptable.
Yes, that's right? Correct. I mean, we agree. Yeah, it's unacceptable.
And the Congress, the members of Congress, they all agree.
Correct. Yeah, this is like a bipartisan issue on the Hill, and as Leo mentioned, like we're hearing from a lot of people. Speaker Boehner, he's been great. He spoke out twice, and the Senate just circulated a letter that had 67 signatures on it, also requesting President Obama to step up and provide some leadership in this matter. And then the House has a similar letter that was going around also.
You know, Leo Shane, I just have to think that when you wait so long to modernize, that there's going to be this real horrible undertow.
That's somewhat what the VA has been saying. I mean, Secretary Shinseki has made digital records and ending the backlog a goal of his as well. But what they point out is, look, this isn't a new problem. This isn't a backlog that's developed in the last 2 years or 3 years. This is something that the VA has been struggling with for decades. So as they try and fix it, they've added some new benefits. There was a big Agent Orange decision a couple years ago that added tens of thousands more to the number of folks who could apply for benefits. So it has created this wave of problems, and they say they're sorting through it. They say they're on track for 2015. That, you know, as they get these digital systems, this new processing, their new training systems in place, you know, we'll get there. There's a lot of veterans groups that say, including the IAVA, that say, look, those are good plans, but we've heard these plans before, and it hasn't come to fruition.
David in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome. You're a vet. You've been working at getting compensation since 2008. Do I read that right?
Yes. Previously, first of all, thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, I have applied 2001 with a condition that I got out of the service with a 40% discharge. But after a period of time, they denied our existing problem. And they're talking about backlog, but also in my years of appeal, I've gotten correspondence with someone else's name on my paper,
mm-hmm.
someone else's social security number, and it makes you wonder whether they are focusing on your case or just a blanket statement sent out to you. So what happened in the previous year is because I gave up and reapplied 2008.
Okay.
What happened now, they denied the case again with information that was inaccurate. So my case is in the Federal Court of Appeal, and I had recently to prove my case, solidify my case. I had surgery on my neck and shoulder, and it telling me that my file is with the Federal Court of Appeal, so they cannot do nothing with my case.
Hmm.
So now you are waiting over and over. You've been waiting all these years, and nothing. You can't hear back because each time you call, they're telling you the same thing. It's been, you know, since 2008.
Well, Davi, good luck. Thanks a lot for sharing your story. Angela King, he's right. There are other sorts of stories than just people who have filed their benefits and are waiting 250 days. That's on top of all the other problems.
Right, and we don't even necessarily know the number of days that people wait after they file appeals. The numbers that we have right now are people that are filing for the first time or for the first time for a certain issue. And his story is, you know, it's touching. And we had a lot of veterans with us when we were there for Storm the Hill. We were trying to put a face on the issue and to let lawmakers know that these are numbers, but they're also lives. And that's, you know, 900,000 lives that are being affected by this backlog.
And it sounds like the things David's grappling with are painful as well. I want to introduce now Rick Isbell. He is the Veterans Affairs Coordinator for the City of Columbus Mayor's Office. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Well, hello there. Thank you for having me back.
So how does this come to your office? Do people come to your office complaining about the same things?
Well, you see Veteran Affairs next to anybody's name, and you're going to get tons of phone calls from I need my meds to I need an appointment to how do I do this? So my office is pretty much a conduit of information. And being a disabled veteran myself, I've walked the walk and been through this minefield, as I'd like to say. And the one thing that I'd like to say to David, who had called in earlier, a lot of things that are happening with some of our vets is that they think, well, I need to send in more information. And they keep sending in information, which extends the length of the time that someone looks at their paperwork for 60 more days. So every time you send in something more, they have to leave it open for 60 days.
What's that rule from?
I don't know what the rule came from, but it's one of those things that, okay, well, now you have 60 days to answer back or add anything more to it. And, you know, unless you call in and say, I have nothing more to add, close the case, we're ready to go, they will keep it open for another 60 days. And you have very persistent veterans that say, well, I need more information. I just went to the doctor. Send it in.
Mm-hmm.
So they keep prolonging another 60 days on top of the other 60 days and on and so on and so on. So if they do not have a good representative to say, hey, Davi, Rick, Danny, Jenny, whoever, don't send any more information. Let's work on what we've got in there now, because what you're doing is prolonging this.
You know, some people, when their parents become elderly, they get elder counselors to help them with their financial issues and so forth. Angela King, is there something like that out there for veterans? Can they get people to counsel them like Rick Isbell is right now?
Yeah, so there's veteran service officers, and some of the veteran organizations have those. So the VFW and is an organization that has that. And actually, you know, some of the veterans that I've met that have successful stories are people that went to veteran service officers and, you know, they had fully developed claims when they were submitted, and that did speed up the process for them.
Yeah, never do it alone.
Never do it alone. Robin and Wes Jefferson, thank you for waiting. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. Your topic brings up a myriad of stories, but one of the things that I brought up to my patient advocate, being a disabled veteran, I'm on non-service connected disability, and I brought up to my patient advocate, I said, what should happen with the fiscal shenanigans that go on who would be really affected, service-connected or non-service-connected veterans? Who'd be cut off the dole first, because that would be a dangerous thing to happen. Because when you take us off the dole, and we're not allowed to work on non-service-connected disability. And service-connected, you can work all you want, as long as you're able to, but non-service-connected, you're not. But if you were to take millions of us off the dole right off the bat, you know, and she looked at me like a deer in the headlights. She didn't know how to answer it. She goes, I never thought about that.
Okay.
And
I'm sorry. Rick Isbell?
I'm pretty sure that with a non-service connect disability, there is a certain amount that you can make, and it's very low. Don't get me wrong. It's almost not like not working. But he's right. He's right. If they were the first ones to be cut, it would be devastating for a lot of these people who are on the non-service connected disability.
Okay. All right, Robin, thanks for that call. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you have a story to share. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We have Leo Shane on the phone from Stars and Stripes. Also with us, Angela King from the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, and Rick Isbell. He's the City of Columbus Mayor's Office ADA and Veterans Affairs Coordinator. We're talking about that backlog at the Department of Veterans Affairs for veterans benefits. One of the proposals to fix the problem is to enforce mandatory overtime for all claims employees. And I was wondering, Leo, what has been the impact of that, forcing people to work longer?
Well, the claims employees aren't happy about it. Right now, I've heard from quite a few of them who have said, we've done this in the past, we've had mandatory overtime. The result has been mixed. The result has been a lot of people spending extra hours, but not a lot of numbers coming down from the backlog. Now, the VA says they're confident with the new processes and with the extra time. We will see the numbers come down. We will see more claims getting processed, some of the harder claims getting pushed through. But the VA workers, the folks who suddenly are going to have to spend, essentially work an extra 11 or 12 days this summer, they're not crazy about it.
They're tired as it is. I think it was reading your stories or some other stories. They're under a lot of stress too.
Yeah, and there's a lot of back and forth. I mean, the VA is careful to say that, they feel their claims processors are doing the best job they can. This is just a overwhelming wave of work to be done. Folks on Capitol Hill have been more skeptical. They've pointed fingers. They've heard anecdotes that there are offices where claims take a lot longer, where some workers don't want to embrace the digital aspects of the job. And they say that, it is government work. Sometimes you've got folks who are just lazy and it's difficult to get rid of them. VA has not backed any of that. VA says they have highly trained workers. It takes a while for them to get the training, get the experience they need to really work on these claims and to process them efficiently. So you've got a whole bunch of, again, it's a complicated issue. You've got folks who are doing their best to process them and are getting attacked for not doing it quicker.
Carl in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Carl.
Yes. I was given a call in because I heard the program was on today. I represent veterans. I'm one of the 7 accredited agents in Ohio, which means that I've been tested by the Office of General Counsel. I've been found competent. And I represent veterans before the regional office, Board of Veterans Appeals, and can represent at the Court of Appeals Veterans Claims.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of numbers thrown around today, especially the 290-some or the 260-some days for an initial claim. I do a lot of appeals, and the average time that they have now on an appeal is over 1,300 days in the Cleveland regional office. Some of the things that I have found in dealing with the VA where there are problems is communications. There is a very large lack of communications to where everything goes through the phone centers now. The veterans will call in and they'll go to the phone center, and if the adjudicators or the VRSs have not put anything in the computer, those phone
claims cannot they can't answer anything for the veteran. A lot of the issues which we're coming up with, which the IAVA has identified, has been multiple issue claims. Back when we first started doing claims way back in the Vietnam era, and that wasn't when we first started doing them, the veterans only applied for one issue or two issues. But what we found out through the years is many of those World War II, Korean, Vietnam veterans, the first Desert Storm, Desert Shield veterans, as their disabilities and as they have aged, the secondary conditions have come up, so the claims themselves are now so much more difficult. And the duty to assist and many of the other things which were not in effect back in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s are now in effect. And that itself is slowing some of the claims down, the multiple issues, the denials that we have seen, some of the issues that have been denied, and this is anecdotal. I have had people who have retired out of the military and have had their exam through the DOD and the VA programs, the pilot programs where they did the physical before they were released. They were denied service-connected, although the physical was done while they're on active duty because the condition did not occur while they were on active duty. I mean, you get, and this is not, those are not anecdotal either. We have issues where the VA has denied service-connected when a person, especially this occurs for the Reserve Guard members who have been activated, and they have a condition that has been listed as a line of duty. And a line of duty determination says that that occurred while they're on active duty, yet an adjudicator who may not be fully trained or may not know what line of duty means has denied service connected because that condition did not occur in the line of duty.
Okay, Carl, thanks for your call. It's befuddling. Leo Shane, it's just absolutely befuddling to me.
Yeah, and a couple of points he raised in there. We have heard from VA that is one of the reasons that it takes longer to process claims. When guys come in today, when women come in today, we're not looking at something as simple as, you know, just back pain or just hearing loss. We're looking at multiple conditions. We're looking at post-traumatic stress on top of a traumatic brain injury, on top of a head wound, on top of. So, you know, you do have different ratings and different processes for each of these injuries, and you know, and as things come in, as veterans submit more information, there's a lot more paper to go through. There's a lot more files. Even if it's digital, there's more windows to go through and sort through all that. We've been talking about the initial claims or the renewal of some claims and not the appeals process. We've heard a lot about the appeals process and the amount of time and the problems that causes. I think the general sense on Capitol Hill is we'll start to worry about how much time the appeals process is taking once we get the initial steps in good shape. If we can get people through in 4 months and then they file an appeal, that's a lot more palatable for us to deal with the secondary problem once the first one is handled.
Through in 4 months and accurately processed in 4 months as well, I think.
We haven't really discussed that at the outset.
Yeah.
But that's part of their stated goal, too, is not just processing these in 4 months, but to have 98% accuracy. So I believe last month they had their claims accuracy hit 90%, which was one of the highest ever. But that still means that there's quite a few claims that are coming through that have errors, like one of the earlier callers said, wrong name or a misdiagnosed condition or just a piece of paper that got missed.
Once again, Carl, thanks for that call. We're talking about the backlog at the VA for veterans benefits claims. If you have a story to share, you can give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Yes. Support comes from ARC Industries, creating employment opportunities for people with disabilities and helping businesses grow their own inclusive workforce. ARC is dedicated to the success of its customers and employees and believes our community is at its best when we're all working together. Online at arcind.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Julianne Moore. She plays an out-of-control rock star and mother in the midst of a custody battle in the new present-day film adaptation of What Maisie Knew. One of her co-stars is a six-year-old girl.
I'd say, listen, oh, I'm going to yell in this scene. I just want you to know, I'll be like, I'll talk like this, and then I'm going to yell really loud, so don't be scared.
Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from Ohio State's Ross Heart Hospital, helping to build healthy hearts with a 2013 wellness series. Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the United States, and regular physical activity is a great way to prevent it. Details about Ohio State's wellness series are at go.osu.edu/series.
Columbus on the Record brings you in-depth, thoughtful, and balanced analysis of the issues impacting life in Central Ohio. Be sure to watch WOSU News Director Mike Thompson and his panel talk about the top local and national stories of the week. Watch Columbus on the Record Friday nights at 8:30 on WOSU TV.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about the backlog at the Veterans Administration for Veterans Benefits. If you have a story to tell, give us a call, 614-292-8513. If you have a question, certainly welcome to call and pose your question to my guests. Leo Shane, reporter for the Stars and Stripes, who's been covering this issue. In the studio with me, Rick Isbell. He is with the City of Columbus Mayor's Office, ADA, and Veterans Affairs Coordinator. And also with us in the studio, Angela King. She's a three-tour Iraq Navy veteran and leadership fellow at Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Just want to let folks know that on Memorial Day this coming Monday, the IAVA is asking everyone to go silent at 12:01 Eastern Time. In memory of the fallen. If you want to know more information, you can go to IAVA.org and learn more about that. I wanted to know, Angela, and anybody who wants to jump in and talk about it, but are some vets waiting longer than others? Do we have any patterns that are emerging out of all of this?
Yes, so we do know, you know, we mentioned earlier that the average wait is 273 days, but in larger cities, it can be over 600 days. And here, even in Cleveland, as our guest mentioned about the appeals, but for initial claims, it's over 400 days that people are waiting in the city of Cleveland. And then, you know, like cities in, like New York City and other larger cities, it's over 600 days, and that's their average wait time.
So is the idea, Leo Shane, they just need to put more people in place at those bigger cities? Doesn't that make sense?
That's one of the things they've discussed, and they've discussed different training, different ways to approach, different processing. You know, part of what they've done is the rollout of these digital systems, the Veterans Benefits Management System, and they've been trying to push that forward to some of the more problematic regional offices. I think at this point it's deployed to all but 10, 40-some, and then the other 10 should have it this year. I should mention, because you asked about the times, yesterday on the Hill, the Undersecretary for Benefits said that as of a month ago, there were 70,000 backlog claims that had been waiting for more than 2 years. Now they've cleared about half of them off the schedule in the last month, and they're hoping in the next 30 to 60 days to get the other 34,000-35,000 completely finalized.
I mentioned earlier just the stress of doing these kinds of jobs and being that clerk, that person taking in these claims, a lot of pressure on them. What's the turnover like? Do you know, Leo?
You know, I'm not totally sure. I haven't seen any recent numbers on burnout or in terms of how difficult it is to keep these folks. I do know that you know, there's been some discussion of that about the pay and about the bonuses. There's been a lot of critiques about the bonuses recently, especially from Capitol Hill, that, you know, if offices aren't performing, why is anyone getting getting some extra money? But you know, these are well-paying jobs, and these are folks, a lot of whom, you know, have have dedicated their lives to public service, have been working for a number of years, and you know, rightfully feel like they're part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Rick Isbell?
Well, we do know that attrition is a big problem, and there's a lot of turnover. One of the biggest problems we see, though, is training. And there's no VA university. They don't go and get trained up. And they usually get a little bit of training, and then they're sent to their call centers, where, you know, like a regional like Cleveland, that's all the state of Ohio plus some from the neighboring states. And so you're 6 months at least with a supervisor sitting by your side. So you're taking another well-trained person out of the loop to train up another person to sit side by side with them. That's taking a lot of time and knowledge away from actually getting the job done. And, you know, I think one of those problems is that the regional training may be different here than in Birmingham, than in Buffalo. Although it's the same set of rules, you know, people start slacking one way or start doing it another way, or this is how we've always done it. And instead of here's the hard and fast rules, let's get it done.
Yeah. Is there a sense that there's a lot of isolation between the outposts and VA and Washington, Leo Shane?
I don't know if isolation's the right word, but
okay.
You know, as we just said, that there's you know, it's different offices, it's different you know, different supervisors running, and there's no VA university. So you get we've heard from the veteran service organizations that depending on who they're dealing with, there might be different ways of phrasing things or different things that need to be highlighted in order to speed up the process, depending on which office you get to.
Angela King.
I can't speak too much on the training, but obviously the accuracy, like we mentioned before.
Big problem.
It's a big problem, yeah.
Dave and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hi. I just started listening, so I'm going to have to assume certain things. But the VA, when I was getting out, was like early 70s, and I think there should have been more of a training on how each veteran was exposed to different issues. I had a minor knee problem, but they never talked anything about traumatic stress, or they never talked about my history. They never talked about anything like that. That was never discussed, and I think for all the money that was spent on the Vietnam War, what was it, $1 billion a week or something? I think they just completely skipped over working on the veterans after they got out. And I don't know, the money seemed to be all put into hardware rather than maintaining the health of the soldier.
Hmm. You're a Vietnam vet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you came out with some obvious injuries, but the less obvious ones went untreated for a long time. And
well,
so
I don't know. See, that's the question mark. Okay. There should have been some basic psychological testing, don't you think?
I think that that's what they're learning now. Leo, I think we've talked about that before, that
mean, the amount that we've learned about traumatic brain injury, about post-traumatic stress, about depression, about a lot of mental health issues in the last 5 years has been amazing. Forget the last 40 years. So I think the caller is right. I think a lot of people would have benefited greatly from real in-depth psychological testing while they were in the service and better preparation. I don't know how much of it was really available then. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of, as I said a little bit earlier, a lot of the claims that we're seeing over the last couple of years have been from older generation veterans coming back and saying, hey, you know what, I do have PTSD. It wasn't diagnosed at the time, but here's the evidence, here's what I've dealt with, and here's how I've adapted to that. There are also, you know, as time goes on, we learn more things. That was part of the decision a few years ago by the VA to grant some more benefits for certain conditions related to Agent Orange exposure. There's a lot of research being done by the VA to go back and see, you know, what happened during times of war, what injuries were occurred, and what's the responsibility. In the case of Agent Orange, it took decades for for the VA to really discover what was going on, what the long-term health effects were, and where they could step up and address that.
Thank you, Dave and Bexley, for that call, which brings me to another question. Are the waits longer for some types of benefits? Angela King, any thoughts about that? So if you are suggesting you have PTSD or Agent Orange, Rick Isbell,
I can't speak for 100% certainty, but I don't think so. I mean, as long as the claim is fully developed, then it's processed as it is. We don't really have numbers, I don't think, on whether PTSD or TBI carries a heavier wait time.
Right. And the only way that I think it would take longer is if it wasn't fully sought out and you had to find out more information and go to different doctors. And
okay.
That would make it a little bit longer. I think the thing that would make this, you know, if we got down to brass tacks, and it's mm-hmm. been mentioned here and there little in this when we're talking, we have two different antiquated softwares. I know the VA is trying to do a new one. The, you know, Defense Secretary Hagel said they're not going to do a new one. They're going to look at something different. Not going to adopt the same ones as VA. What we need is the same set of rules from both sides. We need the same medical codes. I mean, my medical code in the Air Force was much different than my medical code for the VA. They did not come across. If something happens to you in the military, it should be able to come smoothly across and go into the VA's information, and they should be able to look it up. Bada bing, bada boom, we're done. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why you have to go back and prove that you're innocent before you're guilty.
Mm-hmm. Angela? Yeah.
Why not? You know, I mean, we're in the military before we're getting out, and we're taking care of a lot of other things. Why not? We already know what we've endured and what issues are going on. Why can't the VA know that when we're getting out? Why is there this huge drop off? And you hear stories from people like that. When I went down to Storm the Hill, I asked other Ohio State students if they had stories, please send them to me. Arm me with this information as I go down, you know, to talk to members of Congress. And I heard stories from people, specifically one soldier who spent time in Walter Reed and endured 20 different surgeries, and he had waited over 300 days. He was passing, he probably has now passed his year mark. And it's like they knew about it. The DOD knew about his injury. Why does he have to come out, struggle in the civilian life, and wait for the VA to decide on his claim that he, you know.
Right.
You know, Shane, I don't know whether it was from reading your articles or somebody else's, but in one of them, they described the process by which a claim is decided. So somebody, they see that they're reporting a broken rib. They get a percentage of their claim, of a full claim for a broken rib, and you
right.
get increasingly more for if there's more than a broken rib. If they've taken out a chunk of your skull, you get some other percentage. I mean, it seems so arcane and detailed. Is there not a way to streamline these things more?
Well, and that's part of the new Veterans Benefits Management System that they've been touting over at the VA, is to take the thick booklet that has all of these codes that says, you know, a missing leg is worth, you know, 70%, PTSD on this level is worth 30%, and they're working to digitize that to make it easier with some keywords. You know, the long-term goal is to simply have these forms flow in, have certain keywords highlight it, and have it just spit out a ratings number then. But we're still probably years away from that. And I think as Richard just said, you know, it's so much more than just deciding on the rating. It's getting all the right paperwork. So, you know, if you can't get, you know, your military records transferred over quickly, if there was a medical doctor that has a certain code and doesn't translate over well, you know, it takes a few days for someone to figure out, okay, in the Air Force, when we talk about back pain, it's this, but in the VA, we talk about this, or the Navy, we use this number. So there's a lot of work being done now to try and simplify that, to try and cut through, you know, how do we find ways to get into that common format and move ahead. And the VA and DOD have promised that by the end of the year, we're going to start seeing some of that in terms of medications that folks have used and basic examinations. They're going to have a format that is easily readable by any of the service branches or by any VA doctor. We'll see. A lot of the veterans groups are are excited by the idea and skeptical that it will finally appear.
You know, there's been a lot of focus on Eric Shinseki, the VA secretary. You mentioned him earlier, who has instigated the computerization and so forth. A Huffington Post article this week noted that he was the only senior officer in 2003 to say that the Bush administration's war plan was inadequate. But he wasn't talking about the VA at that time. Was anyone thinking about the outcomes, about the VA end of the equation when they planned the wars?
There's been a lot of criticism on that from both sides on Capitol Hill that folks haven't adapted quick enough, and especially during the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, there was a lot of talk about the long-term costs of the war and how this was going to be impacted. I think you're seeing a VA right now that is trying to catch up that would have been well served 10 years ago to make some of these decisions, but has not necessarily gotten the funding over time to do that. It's worth noting that Defense Secretary Hagel, back in the early 80s, stepped away from a job at the VA in protest over these same issues about data handling and going to digital records and modernizing the VA. That's 30 years ago. He took a principled stand and stepped away. 30 years later, now he's back, on the other side trying to figure out how to help the VA get to that point.
An email from William. He says, my case goes back to 2003. It is 10 years old and has been remanded five times due to CMP evaluators in Cincinnati not listening to the Court of Appeals request for medical information. They are hostile and go outside of their own rules and regulations. Who is looking at these personnel? So lots of ongoing problems don't seem to have any end in sight for the individual who's waiting for some help. Angela, when people call you, what do you tell them?
I mean, obviously, IVA, myself, we're here to endure this. We're here to wait until the backlog zero and hold the VA to their word, because, like it's suggested, we're skeptical. We've heard this rhetoric before, and we have to be vigilant on this issue. And again, for us personally, we would like the president to step up and say something,
Rick Isbell?
I have to agree with her. When someone calls into my office, I can say from my point of view what happened to me, how I got through the system, and listen to what they have to say and try to get them to the right people. And try to make great suggestions that will help them in the long run, what to say, what not to say, how to act, what to do, and make sure that you have a good representative. That is the key point, of making sure your representative don't go at this alone.
Okay. Richard Isbell, he's with the City of Columbus Mayor's Office, ADA and Veterans Affairs Coordinator. We'll have a link to that office on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Rick, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And also Angela King with the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, IAVA.org, if you want to learn more about that. Angela, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And Leo Shane, reporter for Stars and Stripes, thanks so much for joining us.
No, thank you. Anytime.
And thanks to everybody for listening. Special thanks to production assistant Shannon Clary for producing today's show. Thanks to the All Sides staff as well. Producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Rachel Quimby, production assistants Karen Chavan and Leticia Wiggins, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Radio operations director Kevin Petrulla. Senior broadcast technician Eric French. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher. This is 89.7 NPR News and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org.